things are getting real. The Tennessee Titans roster is down to 53 players. Practice squad is pretty full. Yes, there's a kicker. Two kickers between those two groups, actually. There are a few more draft picks who are gone at this point. I think you can call it an eventful set of cuts that got to the Titans, that got the Titans to this point. Coming off a 7-10 season, Rand Carthen, a new general manager, obviously, and Coach Mike Vrabel shook some things up, made some changes, and we will get right to that in this edition of the Believe in Titans podcast. With tonight, no Denard Walker. Denard is otherwise occupied this week, but he will be back in the fold next week. But I am David Beauclair, joined as always by John Glennon of the Nashville Post. John, how are you?
Sir, thank you.
Doing good. Well, let's look at some of the headlines, I guess, in terms of the roster moves. Among the players who were cut were 2021 draft pick Racy McMath, a wide receiver who, of course, has tantalized at times the last couple of years, but never has become a consistent producer for this team. 2022 draft pick Chance Campbell, who's had two really good preseasons statistically speaking, but got hurt last year and got pushed out this year. Hassan Haskins, last year's rookie running back, considered at that time the heir apparent to Derrick Henry. He is on the commissioner's exempt list, which basically makes him persona non grata. That is not a team decision, of course. That is a league decision. It's discipline. It is related to the off-field domestic violence incident in which he was engaged, and how long he will be on the commissioner's list is not clear at this point. I think the way the roster shakes up, and we'll probably talk about this more, it'd probably be fine with the Titans if he ends up with a redshirt year here. I think they feel pretty good about their running back position. Tennessee also claimed defensive back Kendall Vildor off waivers from the Chicago Bears, a guy who's been primarily a cornerback, but as his career has gone on, and that's three seasons now, it seems like has transitioned into more of that inside guy, kind of safety guy, that they just call him a defensive back, although on the Titans current roster he is listed as a cornerback again. So we will see what all that means as he settles in with this team. And so some interesting names who made it. It was good if you were an undrafted rookie on this team to have the last name Jackson. Wide receiver Kiaris Jackson and safety Matthew Jackson both made it. Jackson is a hometown kid from Hillsborough High School right here in Nashville. Colton Dowell, the late round pick in this year's draft, the wide receiver out of UT Martin and nearby Mount Juliet, Tennessee, also made it. And I think the one guy who was not a surprise among the undrafteds who made it was edge rusher Caleb Murphy, who was one of the most consistently productive players in the preseason. Three quarterbacks sticking around. Not everybody took that approach. We'll see how long that lasts for the Titans and who will be the emergency third string quarterback in week one and going forward. All these are interesting developments, I think. We should also note that Dylan Radens was removed from the physically unable to perform list, is on the active roster, and which means they think he might be available to play in some regard in the opening weeks of the season. So John, that's a lot going on there. You tell us where to start. What was sort of the most interesting development for you as you studied this thing?
You know, honestly, in the past few days, we've had, some certainly, as you mentioned there, all kinds of things going on. But I still go back, even before the cuts, as to the guys that we saw on our first practice following training camp, and some surprises there, and some big names returning to the to the field that we didn't necessarily, expect to return so quickly. Treylon Burks was out there Monday, and that, was probably the biggest surprise, and extremely welcome news to the Titans and Titans fans. This is 12 days after this guy suffered an LCL injury, and we initial reports were that it wasn't a very severe sprain, but nonetheless, there's still a pretty wide range of how long an LCL can keep you out. But here he is, not just out there standing and watching his teammates, but he's going through drills. I would say that in what we watched, it was less than full speed, but no brace, no wrap, anything like that on his knee. He made a nice one-handed catch while we watched. He went up in the air, came down on one leg, no problems. That's a huge development, obviously for the Titans. Takes so much weight off DeAndre Hopkins. It adds another element to Ryan Tannehill's passing game. It's a big, big development. You mentioned Dylan Raidens too. Guy tore his ACL in December.
December,
So,
yes. And he's a
we
big
thought it was
man.
big man. Yeah, right. We thought it might be a little bit more time, but here he was out there. And again, there was not a brace on him. He's going through drills, light contact and so forth for an offensive line drills. So that's a development too. There's one school of thought that says, hey, is he maybe the guy now at right tackle? Because of course the Titans have had so many questions at right tackle, with Nicholas Petit-Frere sidelined with a suspension. Chris Hubbard is there. Justin Murray is kind of pushing him a little bit. So some people are saying, hey, maybe Dylan Raidens. But I don't know if I'd go too far in that area because if we all remember, they wanted to make Dylan Raidens a right tackle desperately
Two
going into the
years
22.
ago. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the whole focus of the offseason was, he's going to be our guy. We're committing to Dylan Raidens at right tackle. No more a swing guy. He's the right tackle. And they did that through the whole offseason and through a good deal of training camp and decided he's not a right tackle. And since then, he's going to be a guard. So it's important that he's back in terms of depth and experience a little bit. But I'm not sure he's the answer at right tackle. And then finally, the third guy who came out for the first time in a while was Monty Rice, the inside linebacker who we hadn't seen since the first preseason game. He played a handful of snaps and then was gone. And we assumed it was injury, or at least a lot of us, including yours truly, assumed it was injury because sometimes you see guys around the field and maybe they're doing exercises or something like that, and you can't really report on it, but you just kind of make a mental note and say, oh, that guy's coming back from injury. Kind of the case maybe with Rice there. But so I asked him in the locker room, after this practice, I said, Monty, is it good to be coming back? You were kind of penciled in as a starter, and then the injury hurts. Were you kind of frustrated by that? And he said, injury. I said, well, I guess I assumed it was an injury. And I said, don't assume anything. I said, well, I guess I have to ask you, what was it? And he said, life and God. That's about the best way to put it. And I couldn't bring myself to follow up on that, Dave. I said, okay, thank you, Monty. Well, good best of luck to you with that. So to me, it was good for the Titans that he's back out there. But wow, what a more of a question mark now that he wasn't injured and missed that time than if he was just a regular injury and sat out. So to me, those developments, in a lot of ways, were even bigger than some of the cuts that we saw.
Yeah, Rice's answer to you certainly calls into question, I think, and again, it's open to broad interpretation, I
Yeah,
guess. I mean,
sure.
it could mean any number of things, but certainly one of the things it could mean is he's questioning how much he wants to play football. And one thing that Mike Vrabel says unfailingly is he is interested in guys for whom football is important. He talks about it at great length, at least once or twice a year, that it's too hard a game, that there's going to be moments that if you don't love it, there's no way you can produce at the level you need to. So I assume that is and again, I guess maybe it's dangerous to assume given what you just recounted, but there have to have been conversations with, are you good? Can we count on you when the time comes? Because, Monty Rice is a guy who's always, when he's been out there, he's played like a guy who loves it and enjoys the physicality and the violence of it and plays at full speed and does those sorts of things. So if he's questioning that in any way, I think it'll show when we get to see him. The Treylon Burks thing is good news. Of course, the bad news about that, I neglected to mention this among the bevy of other things, is that Kyle Phillips was placed on injured reserve, meaning he's going to miss at least the first four games of the season. But
I should say real quick, David, technically he has not gone on IR yet.
yet.
The report is that he will be.
Will.
We assume that will happen, tomorrow, but technically not. But anyway, go
Yeah,
ahead.
it's okay. Yes, it's not official at this point, but that seems to be where things are heading. And there was some speculation. I think we talked about it, the possibility that the same thing could be true of Treylon Burks. So the fact that you're going to have one of those guys is a whole lot better than having neither of those guys. And yeah, there must be something about the treatment of knee injuries these days, when a Treylon Burks can not only get back on the field and be confident and loose enough that he's jumping and making one-hand catches and doing those sorts of things, and Dylan Radins is back there with no brace, not, I mean, we should start to become numb to this sort of stuff. I mean, we saw Bud Dupree come back quickly a couple of years ago, and Robert Woods last year was the same sort of way. I mean, eventually, I guess we're going to have to stop marveling at these returns these guys are making from these serious knee injuries. But the other thing that I neglected to mention, which of course is very important, well, I hinted at it. The Titans traded with the New England Patriots, gave up a 2025 seventh round pick for veteran kicker Nick Folk. And when they announced their practice squad, 15 of their 16 spots were filled. The 16th spot, according to many reports, again, this is as we record this, it's not been officially released by the team, but Cade York, formerly of the Cleveland Browns, will be getting that spot. John, I talked about it last week. I said I'm not sure Mike Vrabel knows what he wants in a kicker, the way we've seen this team cycle through them. But as I've thought about it in the wake of this Folk move, maybe he does. I mean, you look at this. He took over in 2018. At that time, Ryan Succop was 32 years old and had been in the league a while, including with the Titans for a while. He was supposed to be the kicker again in 2019. Obviously, injuries changed that. You go to 2020, Steven Goskowski at 36 years old comes in here. The next year, Randy Bullock quickly settles into that job at 32 years old. And now you've got 38-year-old Nick Folk coming in here. So maybe Vrabel just wants guys who have done it and feels like, okay, I mean, it seems like the polar opposite of the punter situation, because it was clear what he wanted from a punter was somebody who could just bomb that thing and flip the field at any time. He wasn't as enamored with Brett Kern's precision as a lot of us were, or a lot of others were, I think. And in this
Well,
case,
now he seems to want Ryan Stonehouse to do that. That's
yes,
interesting.
in this case, clearly a 38-year-old is not a guy who's probably going to be bombing the ball into the end zone on every kickoff and whatnot, but a proven performer in this league, a guy that I would think if he has to make a kick late in the game, he's been there, done that. You can trust him. I mean, are we assuming York, or I mean, not York, excuse me, Folk is the guy in their minds from for the barring a disaster, a Michael Badgley-like disaster? I mean, or do you think York, who was a draft pick of the Cleveland Browns last year, got off to a good start before struggling and then struggling this preseason? Do you think maybe they could be enamored with him and they want to take that we could see a change at some point?
Yeah, I think certainly the number one option is obviously Nick Folk. I mean, they give up not a lot, but they do give up a 2025 seventh round draft pick to bring him here. And it's just it's, we've talked about the kicking situation for the Titans a lot, but it's just such a exasperating situation. You look back at what they did during the off season. They cut Randy Bullock, who the numbers weren't bad for Randy Bullock last year, but they were going to save $2 million against the cap. That certainly, combined with, maybe less than a leg than they wanted, that was enough to say goodbye to Randy Bullock. So by the time this whole thing wheels around, now they're giving up a draft pick and paying $2.8 million, which is Nick Folk's salary for this year, to bring in a guy to fix the problem, that they had cutting Randy Bullock and saving $2 million. But I mean, Nick Folk, as you said, he's 38. He's done it for 15 years. The numbers were good last year, not spectacular. 32 out of 37 overall. I think what's intriguing, 14 of 19 from 40 plus, and 4 of 5 included in that, 4 of 5 from 50 plus. And that's kind of been a shortcoming, no pun intended, of Titans kickers here recently, is an inability to get the long ball there. But he missed three extra points, which is never a good sign. And then, only three of his 33 kickoffs went for touchbacks last year. It's a terrible percentage. And I've heard it said, I need to research it more myself. Maybe the Patriots were playing that kind of special teams where they didn't want a touchback, where they wanted to trap guys, before they got out to the 25. But they also gave up, I want to say they gave up two or three kickoff returns for touchdowns. So if that was the case, that strategy didn't pan out very well. So but to get back to your original question, I think certainly he is the guy to get the first shot. But now they've got a legitimate backup plan, a guy who has a little bit of experience anyway, and a guy who maybe has a future too. If Nick Folk, I think this is he's in the last year of his contract. So maybe they look at Cade York as both a backup plan and a future, after Nick Folk is done.
Yeah, well, it's always an adventure, it seems like, with the Titans at this position. Maybe I'm wrong, but I guess maybe I'm shaped by the last few years. It feels like, well, this is not the last time we're going to be talking about kicker transactions on this podcast. It just doesn't seem like that's possible for this team. I mentioned the three quarterbacks are on the roster. Of course, Ryan Tannehill, who had a spectacular showing in the preseason finale. And then Malik Willis and Will Levis. And I think number one, you have to say Malik Willis is one of the big winners of the preseason for the Titans, in that, I don't think there was any way you could say his roster spot was guaranteed at the start of training camp and going into the preseason games. But the fact that Will Levis got hurt, couldn't play the last two games, the fact that Willis played virtually every snap of those two games, except for the three that Ryan Tannehill opened the game against the Patriots with, and an assorted couple by Mason Kinsey and some Wildcat type stuff. But Mike Vrabel actually heaped some praise on Malik Willis following the New England game, saying, which Willis again was far from perfect, but Vrabel talked about his competitiveness and the way he came back and battled back from mistakes and like that. And the next day he said, of course, that he had not seen enough from Will Levis to say, yes, he is my number two quarterback going into the regular season. So I guess my next question to you, John, is, can Will Levis show enough in 2 weeks of practice before the opener to be the number two going into New Orleans, or is that going to be probably a fluid situation, you think, through the first few weeks of the regular season?
I think it's hard to do that in 2 weeks or a week and a half, really, of practices. When you've missed the last couple of preseason games. But that's what kind of surprised me most about what Mike Vrabel said when he didn't, when asked, can you say definitively that Malik is your number two? The answer was no. And that surprised me, because he's coming off a productive game, in which he did earn some praise. He did play, two and a half of the three games, and Will Levis played one half of a game. So I don't know. That to me was certainly a little jarring. That if you can't say now that Willis is your number two in this situation, I don't know. That seems to me doesn't seem to be a good pat on the back regarding Malik Willis. And I thought his preseason he's tough to evaluate in some ways because yes, there's progress. There's definitely progress from where he was last year. There's no doubt about that. He's much, much better. If he was doing that in a vacuum by himself, that would be great news for the Titans. The issue, though, is they need a backup quarterback who can come in and at least keep them competitive. And has he advanced to that point? I'm not sure. I mean, you look at the turnover situation, that he had in the preseason. Again, that was this 2.5 game. He had four interceptions and he fumbled the ball four times, and he only lost one of them, but still could have lost others. That is a concern. And you mentioned the last preseason game, the issue was, hey, it was great. He bounced back. He showed, resiliency. He didn't give up. He proved that he could be better after making mistakes. But at some point, you can't be making that mistake that requires you to bounce back either. So, yeah, I think it could be a fluid situation. Even though I don't, it's hard for me to see Levis making up ground in a week and a half. I guess Mike Vrabel leaves us that option, right? When he doesn't say there's a definitive number two at this point.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, that's going to be one of the more dramatic, I guess, pre-kickoff developments we've seen in a while here in terms of the New Orleans game. Who is going to be designated third quarterback? Because it's going to be telling in a number of fronts, and I look forward to that. I got to ask you though. I know you asked Mike Vrabel after the game. And you didn't get much of an answer. He didn't seem to feel interested in expounding. But what was the point of Ryan Tannehill going out there against the Patriots and handing off three times?
Got me. I'm completely baffled. Obviously you can see playing Ryan Tannehill, if he's going to go out there and throw a pass or two, play a series or two, then that makes a little sense. The only thing that I can think, and I've also heard all kinds of wacky theories, there's some theories that, like, by kind of letting people know in advance that Ryan Tannehill might be playing, maybe the Titans were looking to draw more fans. Which I think is absurd because, it's a preseason game. B, they knew he wasn't going to play very long. C, it was 100 degrees or something like that at the time of the kickoff. But the only thing I can think is, okay, you've got your new offensive coordinator and Tim Kelly. There's a new guy telling you, okay, we're going to do this in the play call. It's going to be in your ear. So maybe it's an opportunity to kind of run through that for a few plays, make sure there are no kinks. Make sure everybody is understanding one another. That is the only reason I can think, the only benefit from it. Other than that, I'm kind of
Yeah.
baffled.
I thought maybe Tannehill said, "Hey, I'd like to go through pregame. I want to go through warmups. I just want to get that under my belt, do all that, go out and play a series." And they handed off the first two times. You figure, okay, a pass on third down, but then there's a penalty backs them up. Now it's an obvious passing situation, and they just hand it off again. And I think the feeling was, okay, he's got to come back out for another series and throw a pass. And he didn't. Which, and I laughed, but he, you asked Vrabel after the game. He said, was the plan for Ryan about three plays or what? And he said, yeah, three. And like that was all they wanted to do. I mean, it was it I mean I assume there was some benefit to it, but those are a couple possible ones. But I thought even if he was going to play, DeAndre Hopkins would be out there too, and maybe the first play they'd throw, they'd call a play for Tannehill to throw to Hopkins, so those two can say, there, we've hooked up, we've got a connection, the people in the stands get excited, and then hand off the rest of the time and get out of there. But I think clearly they're worried about him taking hits. And you know, even in a preseason game, they didn't want him touched. And maybe in retrospect, it was a it was a good thing, because the starting offensive line, after having built some confidence, some goodwill, maybe through the first two preseason games, looked completely different in this one for the most part. And I think there's a greater sense of pessimism about what might happen now when teams are actually game planning and blitzing more and doing, you know, throwing the full weight of their schemes at this unit. Did you sense that too, John? Do you think that that line spent a good bit of its goodwill with that performance on Saturday night?
To some degree, I think that was the case. You know, in a small sample size in those first two preseason games, you know, things had gone pretty well for that first team offensive line. You know, and I think in the biggest concern to me in the offensive line coming into preseason or coming into training camp, you know, was pass protection after so many sacks allowed last year, and you know, of course, Tannehill getting hurt. And I think for the most part, you know, they were decent in pass protection. You know, it was really the backups that suffered the eight sacks in that opener against Chicago. So pass pro, you know, okay, but boy, in that game against the Patriots, and we also need to point out that New England, you know, played very few first teamers as well on defense. So it wasn't as a case of going head to head ones versus ones. They were going against backups primarily, and there were zero holes for the running backs, you know, for those first two or three series. So I think that was definitely concerning. And, you know, Mike Vrabel talked about the need to get off to a better start. And you know, when he was talking about the offensive line, and I kind of, you know, asked some of the offensive linemen, is that more, you know, an attitude out there, or is that about assignments? And you know, there's a sense that it was kind of both, that they didn't do things as well as they needed to do. You know, and just having that whole mindset of you know, imposing your will on the defensive line was not something that we saw. And that's something that's going to have to pick up, certainly, by the time we hit September 10th and the opener against New Orleans.
And as we wrap this up, you know, we'll stick to or get back maybe a little bit to roster construction here. And I'll ask you for sort of one final thought. My final thought as I looked at this is, and I think maybe this is more a Rand Carthen effect than a Mike Vrabel effect. I've always felt the last few years that Vrabel was shaped by his time at Ohio State and is enamored with those, you know, those guys coming from elite programs. You know, all other things being equal, you look at a couple of the guys who made the roster this year, and I mentioned Caleb Murphy, who was an effective pass rusher throughout. This is a guy from Division II Ferris State who was the Division II National Player of the Year. You look at a guy like cornerback Anthony Kendall out of Baldwin Wallace College, and even Matthew Jackson, the local kid we mentioned earlier out of Eastern Kentucky University. It seems like all of a sudden there's more of a willingness to say, hey, it doesn't matter the level of competition these guys played against, you know, we see what they can do, and it'll translate to the NFL. So I think that was maybe one of the more intriguing developments of this roster too. What would be your final thought here, John, as you look at this thing?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was interesting, some of the guys that they kept. You talked about some, you know, another guy, Otis Reese IV, I don't think was making a whole lot of rosters in the projections out there. But it's an interesting case, because this is a guy who played safety at Ole Miss, and he's 6'3", 214 pounds, and now he's basically playing linebacker. You know,
so he's Donald Trump. He's Donald Trump in pads, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, perhaps a little bit misinformation there on the weight, but anyway, that's what they're trying to move him into. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. But he's got great special teams, you know, potential. The other guys you mentioned, the local connection, Matthew Jackson, huge for him. And again, another one who's saying, look what I can do for you on special team. I'm a great athlete. You know, those were his big attributes as well. But Still, if there are concerns, there are positional concerns. I think we talked about offensive line. I think safety is another one. We've talked about it a few times, but the depth at safety. You've got your starters, Byard and Hooker, two of the best, but your three guys behind that, Molden, Mike Brown, and now Matthew Jackson, not a one of them has played an NFL snap at safety. So it'll be interesting. Even though Molden play a little hybrid, but interesting to see what happens depth-wise there.
Yeah, it. But this is what this team is going into week one, and next week will be week one. We will have our sights set squarely on the game against the Saints, and be looking very much ahead to that. We will have Denard Walker back with us then. Until then, John Glennon, thanks as always.
Thank you, David.
And I am David Beauclair. This is the Believe in Titans podcast. We thank you all for listening.